What's up, guys? This is Justin Coffin. This is going to be a 330 Sports Show special edition. You guys know we do a little bit more than sports on this show. We are going to do a film room breakdown of the movie Goodfellas, the 1990 classic. We'll get into all the details of that. But this is going to air on June 7th, 2022. So joining us today, we got plenty of guys that have been on the show before, and you know, I'm going to kind of introduce them, go around the horn, and we'll get into it. So bottom right of the screen, we got Dave Hodge. He's joined us for plenty movie breakdowns and you know, a bunch of sports stuff as well. In the bottom left corner, joining us for the first time on the show, but very familiar with the show, is Mario Riccardi. He was kind of our producer behind the scenes at Youngstown Studio for a long time. Mario, tell him a little bit about your production company now that you're running.
Oh, yeah. So I basically do a lot of local commercial film video production. We do, we've got like accounts with Penguin City Beer, all the healthcare systems in the area. We do like the golf headquarters, like sales spots too. But yeah, I've always liked movies, and I was trying to figure out how do I make this a thing? And that was, you know, one thing led to the next. And so here we are. And actually we do some work with Project MKC now. So
that's right. That's right. So, bringing it all full circle. So, Mario, not just being kind of a movie, well, you know, right now a producer, a director of sorts, also has a vowel at the end of his last name, so brings more credence to this podcast, being an Italian mafia movie. And then right. Obviously up in the
100%. Top. I'm 100%, by the way. So
yeah, the Irish hoodlums for the rest of the three.
Exactly. Exactly. We couldn't have this be a fully stamped podcast without at least one Italian guy on here. So and then of course in the top left corner we got Greg Kirshner. Greg is actually going to run point on this show. He's going to be the Chris Paul, if you will, dish it out to us, but kind of set us up. But Greg's been on plenty of shows. So, Greg, I'm going to hand it off to you, and we'll get going.
Yeah, so, I mean, we've had circled for a long time to do to talk about Goodfellas. I think it's a movie near and dear to our hearts. I think just being from Youngstown, it's, you know, there's some Youngstown connections, and certainly just the mob connection, and the notoriety that Youngstown gets for the mob activity. It's just been a movie that it's been near and dear to us for a long time. So, you know, before we jump in, I would just kind of kick it out to the group here. Maybe we'll start with Mario since it's the first time on the show. You know, what does Goodfellas mean to you? Do you know, when you think of it in your kind of pantheon of movies, where does it rank, and what are your, you know, initial high level impressions of the movie?
Shoot, so when I was a sophomore in high school, my cousin, he's very inebriated at a St. Patrick's Day party we were having, and he gave me like all of his VHS movies, because it was like that era when we're like in the DVD era, right? And so he's like, here's a bunch of VHSs, you know, I'm kind of bestowing them on you. He threw, put them in a trash bag. I took them home. That summer was like the summer I really got into movies, where I like learned, I was like, oh shoot, movies are more than just like, you know, Pixar or, you know, whatever, like superhero movie was out at that time. I was like, oh, film is like cool. And, you know, in addition to like Top Gun or The Godfather and, you know, even like movies like Friday or How High, like Goodfellas was in this like this trash bag of movies, and I started watching it, and I was like, it kind of blew my mind a little bit, because when I'm watching through this movie, with the exception of maybe the mob oriented elements, so like things like the settings, how people were dressed, how people acted, I'm sitting here watching this thing thinking, oh my god, this is exactly like my dad's side of the family. Like, and again, with like the criminal element removed, it was like the way they were doing the callers and the weddings and stuff. And, you know, this is, I'm, I'm growing up from like, I was born in 96. So I'm like in the tail end of like when in Goodfellas, the bars look like they're supposed to be these glamorous places, but you know, the bars would have aged into the early 2000s as kind of these gaudy, kind of ugly-esque like places. And to a degree, we visited a lot of those for like confirmations, first communions with my family. I was like, oh my God, I've never seen like my heritage or background like represented in such an authentic way without someone saying like, this is the authentic Italian American experience. So that's that.
Very, very interesting. Dave, I know we probably text each other Goodfellas quotes, you know, 5 times a week. So what does this movie mean to you?
Yeah. Besides the comic relief that we play with nowadays with sending back the gifts and the quotes and stuff like that, my experience with it is actually a little bit different. Now watching this and having to talk about it on the podcast here, like I'm trying to remember when I actually first saw it. And I can't for the life of me remember the first time I watched this movie. I've seen it like, I don't know how many times now, like it's when it's on TV, it's very rewatchable to me. So, you know, I watched it prior to this, you know, just to get a refresh on it, but very rewatchable. But when I first saw it, like, I can't remember it really leaving like a huge impression on me at that time. So I don't know what age I was when I first saw it, but I mean, as it goes, it just becomes to me like the de facto, like gangster movie. Now, admittedly, like I've seen like Godfather, but I've not actually watched Godfather all the way through. So, I mean, that might be, I've seen parts of it enough to see it together, but I've never like really sat down and watched through it. Whereas I watched Goodfellas, like, I don't know how many times, like I said. So, I mean, going through it is my favorite, you know, mobster movie out there. I think the casting on it is great. It's interesting when you actually go through, and I'm sure we'll get into that. And there's a couple what if on the castings out there that, you know, could have been, it would have been very interesting to see this movie, but it's the classic, and it didn't make a big splash from what I've read about like in the 90s when it came out, but nowadays it's, you know, synonymous with like the mobster movie. So going back to 1990, it's pretty great.
And now, Justin, you said you watched it less than kind of we have. So interesting kind of watching it, because like you said, Dave, even I did. I watched it a million times, but I watched it again yesterday. Watch it from a different lens when you know you have to prepare and actually talk about it a lot. So
yeah.
What was your experience watching it kind of, but still having not seen it too many times, but kind of deep watching it, knowing you have to talk about it?
Yeah. So, you know, I think I'm the late arriver to this movie. I definitely saw it in college at some point. And I kind of always, I think I found out about it because of Home Alone. Whereas like, oh, Joe Pesci, that's that guy from, you know, like I think of him from Home Alone, but so many people think of him from Goodfellas. But, you know, I think the first time I watched this movie all the way through was in college. And then, you know, I probably didn't see it for another, you know, 10 years or so. Rewatched it this past weekend. And, you know, having a different perspective, a different lens on it, I knew all the quotes. I knew a lot of the players in it. And, you know, Greg, I've told you, I've recently started watching The Sopranos. So I'm through 5 seasons now of The Sopranos. And I can see so many of the correlations that go along. It's almost, you know, it's not a prequel to The Sopranos, but it kind of gives you that vibe like Mario was talking about of like settings and locations and the way people do things. It gives you a really good base. So like, you know, I'm a little bit less knowledgeable about this movie than you guys are, but definitely after watching it, you know, 2-3 times, it would be high up there in my movie rankings. Probably definitely a top 25 movie for me. But you know, like so many comedic elements in a kind of a serious movie as well.
And that point you mentioned is in the Sopranos link. I mean, they're well documented. The Sopranos was inspired, you know, significantly by Goodfellas, and not to mention, I believe there are 27 actors from Goodfellas that were in the Sopranos, wow, including some very big names. So there is, yeah, it was almost like it, a bit of a prequel. And the idea of, and a lot of what I think The Sopranos took from Goodfellas, or borrowed from Goodfellas, and a lot of movies have done this, is just the dialogue, kind of the throwaway dialogue that between the characters and the comedic elements that are happening kind of while the plot's happening too. So, I won't belabor the point. I think all you guys had great points. I mean, for me, it's top five for me, and arguably it's maybe the most rewatchable movie for me. It's like, I will watch it anytime it's on, no matter what point in the movie it's on. And The Godfather is a extraordinary movie, and I think in a lot of ways you could say maybe it's a better film, but I think Goodfellas is more enjoyable. And one of the things that really stuck with me watching it again is it's almost 2.5 hours long, and you can't imagine, usually any movie that's that long, you say, oh gosh, there's this stretch of like 15 minutes that's really not that good, and I don't know why they kept this. I can't think of one scene that I would take out to shorten the movie. The movie feels like it's 1 hour and 10 minutes when you watch it. It's nonstop. It is a nonstop adrenaline rush, and it basically takes you like up a hill sort of, and like the first half of the movie's kind of happy. You see the glamorous side of mob life, so to speak. And then when the rails start to come off, you see how bad it gets. And the second half is a train wreck, essentially. All entertaining, but it certainly makes you feel a lot of different feelings than you did in the first half. So that being said, I think the plot is pretty well known by all, so that there's a good quick synopsis here. So really, it's the plot of Goodfellas. It tells the story of Henry Hill, played by Ray Liotta, who unfortunately recently passed last week. We'll talk more about that. So it's a story of, he really is the main character of this movie and the lifeblood of this movie, and trials his time in the life in the mob, including his relationship with Karen, his wife, played by Lorraine Bracco. And then his main mob partners, Jimmy Conway, played by Robert De Niro, and Tommy DeVito, played by Joe Pesci, in the New York mob, and a lot of other good supporting characters. So, again, it's a rise and fall type movie. We could see how glamorous that life can be, and then we can see how quickly it can turn, and the paranoia and the drug, everything that kicks in. So, we touched on the main stars. And I guess I'll add, it was based on a book, Wise Guy by Nicholas Pileggi, as well, which I've not read. I'm sure it's pretty good. I guess a lot of that book is a lot of the narrational dialogue that Ray Liotta does in that movie, is a lot of that's kind of straight out of the book. So I'm sure it's a really, really good book. So we hit on the main characters. I think some other folks who are featured in the movie, Paul Sorvino plays Pauly. Frank Vincent plays Billy Batts. And then I'll tell you what, it kind of gets into some names that are, aren't as well known.
Samuel Jackson.
Yeah. That's exactly what I was going to say. When I rewatched it, I forgot Samuel L. Jackson was in the movie.
Yeah, and I was looking at, I don't know what, like, I was looking at his movie list to see if there's anything, like, really big that he did before that, and I don't think there is, unless I'm just, I mean, I don't know his, like, 80s movies as well, but he had been acting since, like, the 70s, like, late 70s, and so I don't think it's anything big until, I mean, this wasn't really a big role for him either, but.
Yeah, that's right, that was funny, scrolling down this list, and it's like, he's way down on the list.
Right. Yeah, because he's done so many movies, right? Yeah.
It was his first on-screen death.
Huh.
So, fun fact. Right. I
can't fall asleep and get in the car. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
And then I think the other we did talk, we talked about Sopranos. I guess another really small role, but Michael Imperioli plays Spider. And obviously he became Chris in The Sopranos, but a lot of other like people that you would recognize, there's a guy, Mike Starr is his name, which I would not have known his name's Mike Starr, but he's the guy that in the Air France heist, he's the one that kind of lets him in and whatever, but he was also in Dumb and Dumber, and he was the guy that ate the burger with the hot peppers and died. So he's pretty type kind of that gangster guy. But unbelievable cast. Also has Martin Scorsese's parents in it, in various roles and in two different roles. Scorsese's mom plays Pesci's mom in the kind of the famous mid overnight scene when they have Billy Bats in the trunk. And then his dad is the guy that makes the sauce with Indians in prison. So anything else on the cast? I mean, it's very well done. It's the biggest movie Ray Liotta ever did. And it's kind of what he's ultimately getting voted for the most. But I think at the time it wasn't like a, oh my gosh, this guy is a huge star headlining this movie. You know, any thoughts on the cast? Feel free to jump in.
Well, this isn't so much in regards to who's in the movie, but I don't know if you know this. Pacino was offered Robert De Niro's character. Yeah. And he turned it down for a role in like Dick Tracy or something. He didn't want to be typecast. He ended up playing a mobster anyway in like some forgettable, you know, 90s movie. Turned down, like, yeah, it could have been his biggest role since, you know, The Godfather at that point.
Mm-hmm. So. I did read that, and that, I mean, I was actually trying to think, would Pacino do better than De Niro? I mean, that's like a tough call. I mean, he'd probably do as good of a job, but it would have been great to see him in this movie in some form as well.
Yeah, you insulted him a little bit. The only thing I'll say with, oh no, sorry, Greg. The only thing I'll say with the cast is, I just wrote down some of the great names that are in this. So obviously, you know, outside of the main characters, you got Sonny Buns, you got Frenchie, Billy Bats, you got Spider, you got Johnny Roast Beef, you got Tony Stacks, you got Stacks Edwards, you got Fat Andy, Frankie the Wop, Jimmy two times. And, you know, just wrote down some of those names, but I love that just there's so many nicknames that go into that. It just that kind of correlates to like almost high school life where you call someone else, you know, something other than their real name.
There's a scene, it's one of the like the underrated scenes. It's really subtle, but when they actually go through, I forget if it's not the Copa Cabana, but they're going through the lounge and introducing everybody. But yeah, they say a lot of those names, Freddie No-No, Pete the Killer, Nikki Eyes. But it's just great just hearing all these names come out.
Well, and you know, I'm probably stealing one of Greg's questions for later, but that's my favorite scene of the movie, honestly.
Is it?
That's my favorite scene.
And they all have like one little line that they, you know, it's like, share that thing for me. You know, it's just great. And it's from the, you know, from the point of view of essentially him walking through the it's super cool.
Mm-hmm. I was going to call out on the cast. Like, I was reading some facts about it too. I mean, it's interesting on how they prepared for it. So I forget the, who played Karen, the actor's name you said, but she like chose not to like talk at all to like the real life Karen to like get any kind of insight. But like De Niro would call like Henry Hill, I guess up to like 8 times like a day in the movie just to get insights onto him. So just to play the character. So, and then also it's funny because you know, talked about Martin Scorsese's parents. Like, I feel like his mom who isn't named in the, you know, just says Tommy's mom, she pretty much looks like she could be Pesci's mom in the whole movie, like just because of like the hair and everything. So,
well, quick note about Pesci's mom in the movie: she, like, no joke, is like looks just like my grandma Rose. Like, they act the exact same, the same like inflection, the same thing about, you know, if you show up at her house at midnight, she'll offer you food. It's, yeah, I was like, wow, that's funny, but that's how they are.
They show up at like in the middle of the night, and by the time they start eating, they're eating like a full Italian meal then, and the sun's coming up. There's like bread and everything right now. It is very interesting.
That's one thing I've noticed with The Sopranos in this movie. It's all about the food. All about the food.
Food is a extremely prominent in this movie, no doubt. And it makes you watching it too. It really does.
Yeah.
Except when he's making the meatballs at the end and like touching everything, though. Like when it, at the you know, the helicopter scene and all that. That kind of, that's a little gross. He's like walking, like coked out of his mind, rolling meatballs, like holding chicken, opening doors. That's probably the only part that doesn't make me hungry, but the food is so good. So let's jump into scenes, because there's literally a million of them. And you could look, I mean, I don't even know. I don't know where to start, but I guess like you just got to start at the beginning of the movie. And because it moves so fast, it's, you know, sometimes the scenes can be, you know, 10, 15 minute long kind of thing. I consider the whole Young Henry thing to be one giant scene, really. But, you know, I guess if we'll break it down, you know, the opening's just, you know, incredible. Just that first line of the movie, it's probably more, use that one in best quotes too, but just the very first part of the movie where you're like, what the heck's going on? And, you know, what is like, you know, and then they open the trunk and Bats is in there and it's foreshadowing and it's in it. And then the opening line comes out and here we go. And then you have the whole Young Henry scene, which by the way is really, really well done with that character, and Young Tommy too are great. Justin, you mentioned the introduction to the mobsters in the club. I guess the next one that comes to mind to me is the famous Copacabana entrance scene, where they're basically being followed behind by a Steadicam. And I know Mario, you're a big movie producer, director kind of buff, that's a very iconic scene because of how it was shot. And it had to be as continuous take throughout the entire scene, all the way into when they're sitting down and Henny Youngman's doing his comedy routine.
Yeah, that's a big, like, for directors, that's a big, like, if you watch any notable director, everyone's got like one tracking shot, right? And it's like, and they rehearse it for weeks at a time. And fun fact about the Goodfellas tracking shot, not to interrupt, but if you watch the scene through, they're actually traveling in a circle. They had to block off a wall. And if you watch them move through the kitchen, it's going to kill the shot for you guys. So I probably should have put that disclaimer out there first, but you'll see they actually walk into the kitchen and then they end up right where they started. So fun fact, they kind of cheated.
That's
great.
That's great information. I love that.
Yeah. But sorry, go on, Greg.
No, you're good. I'm trying to throw a bunch out there to then go around and see what we like. I know obviously the shine box scene with Billy Bat on it. The full day helicopter, you know, starting at 6:30 a.m. you know, last kind of day before he's arrested scene. Gosh, what am I missing?
Funny how,
gosh, how did I miss that one? Yeah, the funny how. The, you know, making
pasta. Maury's wigs.
The commercial, yeah.
Yeah, so, all right, we'll put it out there. So Justin, we'll start with you. Well, you actually kind of mentioned it, but your favorite scene in the movie is it the intro of the monsters?
I think I just like that because it kind of gives you like a real quick snapshot of who those people are, and you can almost like instantly, you know, just tell what kind of person that is based on the little intro that Ray Liotta's giving, but also like their response or their quick one-liner. So I really like that one. I'm not going to step on anyone's shoes because I know the shine box scene's coming, but so I'll leave that to one of you guys. But I really like the card game scene a lot too, because I think that just gives you like a little bit more into the personality and how freaking insane Joe Pesci's character is in that movie. And he's just like, he doesn't give two shits about anything except for what's best for him. And Christopher from The Sopranos, who plays Spider. It's just weird. You know, obviously anybody that's watching this podcast, it's not giving away spoilers, but Christopher gets gunned down not once, but twice. when you think he's fine, he's back. But, that line where he's like, go F yourself, Tommy. And you know, it's just like, you're going to let, you know, they're just joking around. You're going to let him do that to you. You're going to let this guy. And then he just shoots him and kills him. And it's like, man, that really took it up a notch. So I'd put that one up there as well as the introducing the guys.
Justin, did you ever catch the callback to that scene in The Sopranos?
I can't recall, no.
All right, so in season one, when Chrissy's in the, he's at that like little bakery.
Okay.
And the guy cuts the line and he's like, hey, why are you letting him cut the line? And so Christopher goes behind the counter and shoots the employee in the foot. Yeah. And then when he walks out, he says like the same thing Pesci says, like it happens or something.
Interesting. You know what? I'm going to have to go back and rewatch that. That's a good call. I didn't pick up on that.
There you go.
That's real good. I'll turn it over. I mean, Dave or Greg or Mario.
Go ahead.
I mean, the interesting note. I mean, one of the things that before I talk about the favorite scene, I mean, I think the shine box scene is one of the best scenes. It's one of the most entertaining scenes, but there's so many on this. I have a list that like it's hard to pick. But when you mentioned about the whole spider scene, and it from reading about some of the facts about this movie and just how Martin Scorsese played it, like, there's a lot of scenes that were improv. So improv to a degree, like they knew like the outcome was going to be, but like what they said and how they behaved was not scripted. So like from that, I mean, I don't know how true it is, but from what I read is that the only scripted line was the go F yourself line. And like everything else was just kind of like them just kind of improvising and going with the flow with it. And then interesting enough, like Martin Scorsese, like I guess he gave conflicting accounts to some of the actors. So like when Paulie and Sonny are sitting down, like after the funny house scene, which I also heard on that scene, the background characters, like the people who are just kind of laughing along with it, didn't really know like the outcome of it or whatever, that so their reactions were meant to be more real coming along. So that was one scene where they did that. But then also like when Sonny was talking to Paulie, I guess like he told Paulie to act like, you know, like gave a strict script, act this way, but told Sonny to kind of improv it so that Paulie would be like kind of reacting almost live to like his improv and be kind of caught off guard. So it's really interesting how he like kind of uses that to the advantage to like really draw out the film. And obviously you're watching it, you're not noticing like anything unnatural because it all is just completely natural reacting to everybody. So, but I mean, Shinebox has to be probably my favorite scene, but there's so many. I mean, I do love the funny howl and the coming into the Copacabana, I think is a iconic scene for sure. And I do like the Christmas party, like afterwards, like after the heist, the celebration, you know, how happy Jimmy is and everyone's just in a lively mood. So, but I'll still say the shine box, I think, is probably my most favorite scene. So.
Mario, what do you got?
Hey, actually, I'll tell you what, Mario, hold that thought. Let's take a quick break. Actually, this commercial you're going to see coming up is by Mario. So once we come back from that, we're going to have Mario share his favorite scene. So we'll be right back.
Hey, we are back. So we were going through our favorite scenes. Mario, we'll kick it to you.
Oh yeah. So I think, like, so Dave, like what Dave said, there's so like, there's big scenes that are great. There's little scenes that are great. I love like the part with Layla, the playing that montage, like that stuff's cool. But I think if I had to put myself back in the mindset of like the first time I watched it, I think the scene when Ray Liotta is he's cutting across the street and he takes the butt of his gun to Karen's neighbor's like nose. It's so like that scene when I watched it, I was like, oh my God, like this is crazy. Like I know where it's going. I know what he's going to do. She calls him crying and they set up like this snobby kind of neighbor. You don't like him the first time you meet him, right? Compared to Henry. But like, as I kind of grew up watching the scene, it evolved instead of it being like, oh, this guy kind of like looking out after, you know, his girl and whatever. It's like, you realize he's not doing that because, you know, he hurt Karen. He's doing that because there's a power struggle that Henry as a character is like hungry for, you know, anytime someone tries to go above Henry. And that's how the mob is, you know, that's how they kind of bring these guys up, right? It's all power struggle. So he has to do it, right? He's doing it for him, not for Karen. And I always thought that was kind of an interesting, like Henry Hill in a, at least portrayed in the movie and kind of like one scene in like a minute 30 or less. So.
And he goes to a place with rage there as an actor in that scene. It's like, holy crap.
You see it in his eyes as he's like walking across the street. Yeah.
I guess I had read that he had recently lost his mother, to cancer and like used some of that grief to channel that anger into that moment. But also heard that he made contact a few times in some of the takes with the pistol because he was, you know, isn't into it so much. So very violent scene, very good scene.
So there's an old theater trick. Well, there, I don't know if you guys know that they'll hide a tube of blood up the sleeve, and when you go up to your forehead, that's how you get the blood applied to your nose. It's considered like a low budget trick now, but it's cool. You know, it works.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
So.
Yeah.
What do you like, Greg? What's your scene?
It's gotta be Shinebox. It's gotta be that whole, I don't know. It's just, every line is perfect. And it does. It's at that part of the movie where things are starting to spiral out of control. And ultimately, I mean, that, you know, from a movie standpoint, that's really the fatal mistake that Tommy and, you know, killing a made guy. Now I do have questions on like how, you know, if you're Bats, I mean, he had his whole crew there and then what they all just left. And he's just like hanging out at this bar talking to Jimmy after this guy, like said, keep him here. Like, you got to wonder what Bats was doing, but the whole exchange between those two and, just unbelievable, really. And Martin Scorsese, it's pretty well documented, has a soft spot for breaking glasses over people's heads in bars. It happens in a lot of his movies. It happens in Party. I think it happens in Casino, and this is one of the best uses of the breaking a glass over his head. It's tremendous. So that's probably mine. But yeah, you could say the whole there's 20 of those scenes in the movie. So moving on, and I'm sure we'll touch on
real quick, Greg, because Mario was mentioning something. Like, didn't you say you read a book about like made men or something? Explain what that means to people that maybe don't understand that.
Okay, yeah. So I read a book called Made Men. It's, you know, it's the making of Goodfellas. It was, my mom bought it for me for Christmas a couple years ago. But it's a good book. If you like Goodfellas, you should consider reading the book. But the term made men means that you know, in the mafia, if you rise to a certain level, you're considered made, which is the whole kind of story arc with Tommy towards the end. He thinks he's being made. But yeah, originally you had to be able to trace both sides of your family back to Italian soil, Italy. And then, you know, I think somewhere in the 90s on, it was only one side of your family had to be from Italy. But that was how it went. If once you were made, you know, nothing could really happen to you. But like many of the things in the mafia, you know, they glamorize these ideals and then they go back on them in, you know, a couple of years, and they could kill you if you were made, and, you know, so.
Interesting. Okay. All right. Yeah. No, I just wanted to hear that point, because I had no idea, because I think one of them, I think Ray Liotta even says in the movie, like, we could never be made because, you know, I was part Irish or Irish, you know, yeah, whatever it was.
Yep. Yep.
All right, Greg, back to you.
Yeah. So best quote, there's a million of them. I guess we'll start throwing them out there. So Dave, why don't you start? Anything that jumps to mind, we'll quote.
You know, I want to throw a little curveball on this one, but like my favorite, I don't know if I'm illegally allowed to use it, but you'd be the judge here. But my favorite quote isn't actually, and nothing said, it's the death stare that Jimmy Conway uses in the, you know, afterwards. So like, I don't know if that's, I mean, there's a bunch of great quotes. I'll leave them up to you guys. But like, I will say, like, that's like saying something. Like, I mean, that's De Niro, I think, like one of his finest. Like, he is just in the bar. I mean, for folks that, you know this, may know the scene or don't know the scene, he's smoking a cigarette. He finally realizes, like, he's got to, like, you know, I don't know if it's at that point, he realizes he has to start whacking all the folks that are part of the heist. And at that point, it's like he's going to kill Maury. And so he's just, like, smoking a cigarette, just, like, staring down at the end of the bar. And he just has, like, I think they call it the death stare. And it just, he just plays that scene to a T. Like, it's just, it's perfect. So, like, that's probably one of my favorite, I don't know, it's a quote. I mean, it's like he says a lot in it, but it's like he doesn't say anything. So that's got to be one of my favorites. But there is a ton of them. So I'll let you guys comment on those.
Wait, is that the scene when, like, Cream is playing in the background?
That's what
we're talking about?
Yep. Yep.
Okay. So yep. another movie fact, most times you watch a movie, it's 24 frames per second. So 24 like blocks of celluloid per second is moving. They slowed that shot down to 60 frames per second. And you could really see, like, there's a kind of a glisten in De Niro's eyes in that shot. And you can capture it because they up the number of frames going through that shot. But
amazing.
Okay. Yeah.
He would, and one of the times he called Henry Hill that you mentioned, the real Henry Hill, was literally just to ask him how Jimmy would hold his cigarette. And it was probably that. I mean, that is the level of detail that, I mean, De Niro's notorious for, you know, being what they call a method actor, where you essentially become the character. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like all the fine details. I remember when he played Al Capone in The Untouchables, like, he wore the same where Al Capone wore to just become that character. It's truly so. Yeah. Mario, quote, what do you, anything come to mind?
Oh man, when they're sitting in Tommy's mom's house and they're talking about the painting, and they're like, oh, look, the one dog goes that way and the other dog goes that way, and oh, like, who's that guy remind you of? I always really liked that quote. I always thought that was a really funny moment, because they're like doing this like art criticism of this kind of this goofy painting you could pick up at a thrift store.
That,
I always like that.
I think it was improvised. That was one of those kind of just totally, they were just, you know, when De Niro's like the hoof. I like that. Like improvised. Pretty humble. Justin.
Well, I mean, there's the main ones that are out there, you know, we've already touched on the, you know, am I a clown? Do I amuse you? You know, that I think everyone would probably put that one up in their top one or two. You had mentioned the as far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster. I think that's the actual opening line in the movie. That one's great. The one I'm going to give two here, but I like the one that it's De Niro's character, and I think Ray Liotta is real young at the time, gets arrested, and when he comes out, he just kind of comes up to him and just goes, you know, gives him a little speech. They congratulate him, which I always think is hilarious when he's coming out and he gets acquitted. He's like, never rat on your friends and keep your mouth shut. You know, I'm like, that's kind of a good motto for life. I mean, you know, as long as it's not too serious. I mean, you know, Dave or Greg or Mario, I'm not ratting you out, but you know, maybe if you murder somebody, I might be like, yeah, that guy might have, you know. But no, I think that's a good. I just think that's like a good, not mafia thing, a good friendship thing. You know, you like, you kind of like are loyal to your friends and your family and stuff like that. And the other one, this one's pretty good. This was Ray Liotta said, Jimmy was the kind of guy who rooted for the bad guy in the movies. So, and I always kind of like that because, you know, I think too, we find ourselves rooting. It's like a Tony Soprano thing. You kind of find yourself rooting. You can go to Walter White and Breaking Bad. There's a lot of guys that are like the, you know, protagonists. They're actually like kind of a bad guy, but you kind of root for them. So I just thought that was kind of a good quote.
Yeah, I mean, all those are great. My favorite over the years has actually become, as far back as I can remember, I've always wanted to be a gangster, just because that sets the tone for the entire movie. It leads right into the kind of the opening song, and it's amazing. I have one. I don't know. This is just like when you read it, it's almost like if you go to IMDb and actually read some of these quotes, they're just incredible. And I pulled this one up. I don't know if it's my favorite quote, but it's like, I'm just going to read it. It's like a Henry Hill narration. And it's like, it's the Pauly slice in the garlic thing. And it's like, this is a great quote. In prison, dinner was always a big thing. We had a pasta course, then we had a meat or fish. Pauly did the prep work. He was doing a year for contempt, and he had this wonderful system for doing the garlic. He used a razor, and he used to slice it so thin that it used to liquefy in the pan with just a little oil. It was a very good system. Like, there's a million of those lines in the movie. They're all incredible. The whole movie is rewatchable scenes. The whole movie is tremendous quotes. I also like anytime Pesci insults anybody in the movie, and he does it about a million times. He's great. He was honored for how great he was. So, anything else on quotes?
No, I think that's a pretty solid list. Dave had mentioned earlier too, like, I'm going to get the papers. Like, that guy's in the movie for one scene, and it's just, imagine you got one line in a movie, well, two lines, I guess, and it's that. Like, I mean, is there a better one-liner / two-liner than that, you know?
Well, Greg, I think in our, you know, when we're joking, you said, like, it should have used Jimmy two times, like, throughout the movie. Like, if he had been in the scene where, like, Spider got shot, like, Tommy, you shot the guy, you know, or something like just like, something like that. Would have been great to play him in there. But, I mean, the one thing you got to call out, too, like, is just, like, kind of undertone to the whole thing is that, you know, when Henry, he narrates the whole movie, Karen does narrate for a portion of it, but, like, you know, that, you know, I think that really adds to it. It keeps you engaged to it. Like, that's also, I think, kind of contributes to why it's never gets dry. Like, you mentioned to being 2 hours and 40 minutes at the beginning or whatever it is. And I was thinking the same thing when I actually pulled it up when we were about to watch it. I'm like, wow, this is 2 hours. Like, you know, with our busy lives, you're thinking, I don't have that much time to watch it, but it goes so fast. And, mm-hmm. and I think part of that narration kind of sets the tone to keep it moving. So keeps you engaged.
No question. So, yeah, I guess, you know, we'll jump into awards real quick and then we'll get into some trivia and stuff. But the interesting thing, and you see this with a lot of movies, a lot of great movies that I think have stood the test of time. At the time, I think we talked about it, maybe didn't get the recognition that it deserved. It was nominated for 6 Oscars, which is really good. So, Best Picture, Best Director, Best Screenplay, Best Film Editing, and then 2 acting awards it was nominated for, won. So, Joe Pesci won as Best Supporting Actor, and the other nominee, believe it or not, was not that she wasn't great, but the others who weren't nominated, Lorraine Bracco was nominated as Best Supporting Actress. No nomination for De Niro, no nomination for Liotta. Clearly, I guess I will, you know, flip it to you guys. If you had to give one person an acting Oscar for this movie, do you think they got it right with Pesci, or would you have gone with somebody else?
I mean, if you're
Good, Mario.
No, I mean, I would say if you're, I mean, most watchable, I mean, Tommy, right, on every beat, but he kind of is playing in the same range, you know, right? Most of the movie, he's just kind of out of his mind a bit. Honestly, I would go to Lorraine. I mean, she's got nuance in her performance, you know, and I think if you remove, again, all the maybe more easily accessible violent elements and more like mafia elements of the movie, like her performance is like, you kind of feel for her the most at the end of the day, you know, if you think about it, you know, every time like he's with a girlfriend, you're like, ah, you kind of feel bad a little bit and stuff like that. So
I will say, like, I think that's one of the most intriguing things is as her in the movie. Like, she starts out, it's interesting, going on a date, he doesn't even care about her, he's just quickly to get out of there, to later on, like, but later on, you know, becoming his wife. But she gets so wrapped up in it. So I think she does a great job of playing like this innocent girl that, you know, and then she just gets all tough and then gets kind of embodied in the life. And you can kind of tell, like, she's like, ah, this is not okay. I shouldn't be okay with this. The whole gun thing, like Justin's one of the favorite scenes, or Mario has one of your favorite scenes with the gun. Like, but she just can't get away from it because it's just too enticing with the money and the fame and the glam. So she does a great job.
Yeah, she almost is a Carmela Soprano type in this movie. You know, a little bit more aggressive than Carmela, at least up to the point I've seen. I don't know if I've missed anything yet, but you know, she, like Dave said, she's kind of like just a secondary character until she emerges, and then she kind of talks back to Ray Liotta, and that kind of gets his attention. And then once she finds out about, what's it called, the Gumar on the side, you know, like, she gets real pissed. And like, you know, the one scene that's like really sad to me is when she tells him to get out and like the little girl standing right there. Like, that's just kind of a sad scene. But, you know, that's the way of life, you know, with these movies. But I would probably say Liotta as the main actor does a lot of the narration. I will say though, Joe Pesci, I wouldn't have known who he was besides Home Alone before, you know, like the, you know, obviously Casino, you know, because when this movie came out, Mario, this, you're a lot younger than us, but like I was, I think 8 years old, maybe 9 years old when this movie came out. So, you know, I didn't see it for well down the road, but you know, they all do a great job, but if I had to pick one, I would probably pick Liotta as, you know, as the main, probably the main actor. Who did win the best actor that year? Was it Costner?
That's a good question. I know Dances with Wolves won best picture, and Costner won best director, and the
would have been Jeremy Irons. Was it 63?
Yeah. One thing I did hear, and this was on the Goodfellas Rewatchables podcast, is that you could see Robert De Niro was nominated for Best Actor that year for a movie called Awakenings.
Yeah.
I think Robin Williams is a good movie. But a lot of times, you know, you lobby for Oscars. So I think what happened was the lobbying and the studios were pushing his performance in Awakenings and maybe ignored his performance in, because honestly, I feel like Liotta probably should have been nominated for lead actor because he was, you know, he was the number one main character in the movie. And I would have nominated both De Niro and Pesci for supporting actor and Bracco for supporting actress. Or you could argue she was lead actress too, because she was the main, but she was still a smaller part. But I think they all should have been nominated. And it's so hard to think who should have won. But I do think, just given, you know, maybe we're all feeling we're all feeling sentimental about Ray Liotta, but upon the rewatch, he's spectacular in this movie. And he, you know, and with all these great performances around him, he holds his own and then some, and I don't want to say he carries the movie because they're all good, but he leads this incredible cast and this incredible movie. So I'll agree with you, Justin, Ray Liotta.
Let me, Greg, real quick, like, just because you brought up the awards, let me just read some of these 1990 movies that were out, some of the top ones. You had mentioned Awakenings, but a lot of really good movies that year, you know, like, whether they're Academy Award winning or nomination worthy, that's to be argued with. But Edward Scissorhands was a really popular movie. Pretty Woman, Misery, Days of Thunder, Jacob's Ladder, The Godfather 3 actually came out the same year, which was, you know, not as quality as the other one. Ghost was a really good movie that year. Dances with Wolves, Total Recall. Dave, I know you and I love this movie, Kindergarten Cop. Dick Tracy was kind of a clunker, but had a lot of star power in that. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles came out that year. Rocky V came out that year. We already talked about Home Alone came out that year. The Hunt for Red October, Back to the Future 3. So that was there's a lot of really good movies in the 1990 calendar year.
Oh yeah. Yeah, they really were. And it's interesting. I've never seen Dances with Wolves. I don't know. But it's not a movie that you really see on cable very often. I don't know. I'm sure it's good, but you know, it's almost like sometimes you should do the Oscars 10 years after the movie's made, because it really does change. And you know, when you talk about all those movies, I think Goodfellas is the test of time as well as any of them. So I know we threw some songs around. We do maybe a couple minutes on songs because music is so prevalent movie, and it's prevalent in what Martin Scorsese does. I mean, it's a big feature in a lot of his movies. I thought I saw there was like 43 different songs in this movie, and he had basically, and I heard years in advance of making this movie, it actually within the script, he had put songs in, like, okay, this is where Gimme Shelter is going to be, this is where Layla is going to be, and things like that. I mean, it's just, music is, you watch any Scorsese movie, music is so prominently featured, and they jump from song to song to song to song in this movie. So what song kind of sticks with you the most in this movie?
Mario, why don't you take this one?
You know, I'm going to say, honestly, like, Layla is honestly one of my favorite songs. Great classic rock track, and the way they use it. I mean, it's between that and Then He Kissed Me when they're doing the tracking shot. Mm-hmm. But I'd probably say Layla, just because that montage is sweet, and you just feel like the sublime, like you really start to settle in with that sublime feeling of like the end of this era, and you know, so yeah.
I was going to say Then He Kissed Me was the one too, because that kind of just is the onset of Karen and just like her just getting wrapped up in that scene, and just, and because it has the iconic scene, you know, going through the kitchen, as we already talked about. So that one hits with me. And then also like the music, I don't know the score, but when they start going through everyone getting whacked from the heist, like it's just the piano score that they play. I don't know.
But that's the Layla, like.
Okay. Okay. All right. Okay. So I wasn't sure what it was, but those two are hands down for me.
Yeah. You know, music is so important in any movie, especially the score. I think when the last one of these we did was Home Alone, and we named what's his name, John Williams, the MVP of that movie with the soundtrack. But I just wrote down two. And you guys already named, it's actually the Crystals that sing Then He Kissed Me. And then I wrote down, just because I hear this song all the time, but I never knew who sang it, but it's Bobby Darin, Beyond the Sea. And that's just a song you hear all the time. And it's just like, I feel like it fits that era, because Looking this movie up, you know, it basically took place between 1955 and 1980, and that would have been the height of that type of music, you know, whether it be like Dean Martin or Frank Sinatra or whoever it might be. I think that was kind of like the height of that type of music.
And that was when they were making the thought, maybe they were cooking in jail, the Beyond the Sea, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, I think And Then He Kissed Me was the one I had. Just a quick one. There's a song, it's called Pretend You Don't See Her. And it's when they're in the copa on the girlfriend night. And they just show this like shot of all of them watching, you know, it's all them with their girlfriends watching the songs Pretend You Don't See Her. I think it's Percy Faith might be the name. Good song, but in The Irishman, towards the end of The Irishman, if you've seen The Irishman, they actually bring the instrumental version of that song back. And I feel like that's sort of a subtle homage to Goodfellas again. And Scorsese loves his music. And I think he's played Gimme Shelter in almost all of his movies too.
Hey, Greg, let me interrupt real quick. Yeah. This is non-music related, but just because you mentioned the girlfriends, could we have better cast those girls? Like, the girlfriends weren't nearly that attractive at all. Just my opinion.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. The thing on that though is like, if you look up Henry Hill and Karen Hill in real life, they were not attractive people. So I don't know if that was sort of a, but yeah, I'm with you. It was rough. All the wives and the, you know, that whole scene, it was like, and the girlfriends I'm totally with you.
You know, do you know one of the wives at that that makeup party they're having? You know, that was Scorsese's girlfriend for like 10 years, the one leading the party.
Oh, geez, I did not know that.
No.
Yeah, that was, I think it's, I can't remember which one her name was, but she, yeah, her and Scorsese were on and off for like 10 years, and they ended up breaking up because she found out he was getting married. But yeah, fun fact.
I feel like that's where the inspiration for Buzz's girlfriend from Home Alone came from, that makeup party there.
Well,
sorry, off track.
No, all good. Anything else on the music?
No, I think that's good.
All right.
I've got one. One more thing about music. So it's a loose like reference, but the Frosty the Snowman by the Snowman by the Ronettes that they play during the Christmas song. So that was produced by Phil Spector. And in Mean Streets, Scorsese's, I think, second feature, but like the movie that got him landed. Are you guys familiar with Mean Streets?
I'm not.
Familiar with it, but I've never seen it.
Okay, so it got him landed as like a mainstream director. It had De Niro and Harvey Keitel as like these low-level mafia guys. But another song produced by Phil Spector to start that movie out was, I can't remember, but it has that same, she just died. Do you remember her name? Mm. Lead singer in the Ronettes.
Oh, yeah.
We'll look her up. We'll look her up. But
okay, well, they used the song illegally in Mean Streets, and Phil Spector was going to sue Scorsese and pull the movie, and he said he let him have it. You know, he's like, oh, this guy, he's from the same neighborhood I'm from, yada yada yada. And because Mean Streets was able to be released, you know, down the line we got Goodfellas. So
Veronica Bennett.
No, it's
Nell Bennett or Nedra Tally.
I have to look it up. It's one of them, I think. But so loosely related, but still in the Scorsese verse.
Yeah. Interesting.
But, yeah.
So, all right, moving over to, I guess, trivia. So anybody have some fun facts we didn't mention or any, you know, other kind of notable, interesting points?
One little note I have is that Martin Scorsese did use like some real gangsters, I guess, in it. I think in that earlier scene when Henry Hill was younger and some like they're like roughing up like the mailman and things like that. I think some of those folks were actually real mobsters at the time. So I don't, it doesn't say which one's which, but you know, interesting to note that he really used that. And it's, so that's one little extra I found.
And there was a, and another Sopranos connection there. Young Paulie Walnuts was one of those guys in that beginning part of the movie. Yeah, he's like one of the open in the, he, I think he's involved when they're shoving the mailman in the oven. Too bad we don't have Edgar on here for that. but yeah, so young Paulie Walnuts, and we talked about Michael Imperioli, but I guess we got to mention Lorraine Bracco as Dr. Melfi and one of the main characters in Sopranos as well. I do not know many of the other 27 characters. I assume they're probably, I mean, there's probably a list of them somewhere. I assume they're pretty, they were pretty small roles in the Sopranos and possibly pretty small roles in Goodfellas, but those were the main ones.
There was a Phil, was it, is it Phil Leonardo or Phil Lotardo? Is that his name in Sopranos? Remember he's like hiding in the window.
Yeah.
That's the guy who gets beat up with in the shoe shine scene, right? Shoe shine scene.
Oh yeah, really bad. Yeah.
I'll take my little nod here, and you know, this is obviously a show based in Youngstown. Got to bring in the Youngstown connection. The final kind of scene when Henry, you know, goes into witness protection. You can see an Ohio license plate on the car. And then obviously the paper he picks up is the Vindicator. Now, I went down a little rabbit hole here, and I saw some people that, you know, claimed to be from Youngstown saying that scene was filmed in Angelina Estates in Boardman. It was not. It was filmed somewhere in New Jersey. But I think in real life, he ends up somewhere in Nebraska, maybe Omaha. But, you know, basically what he uses a word, a schnook, I think, like he's going to be an everyday schnook. But that was kind of Scorsese's kind of like tribute to Youngstown being like Mafia Town USA at the time, and kind of, you know, an ode to them. And obviously in season four of The Sopranos, I think Youngstown gets mentioned in like literally every show in that season. But
and the interesting thing at the very end of that scene, when he shuts the door to his house, it makes the sound of a prison door kind of closing, which obviously implies that the this new life that he's in is, you know, how much different is it than being in prison? You know, he's a regular old schnook.
That's a good catch. Good catch there.
I like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I had one and I completely, this is more of a, you know, there's an interesting thing with Joe Pesci in these movies. Like Joe Pesci is not a big guy at all. Right. I think he's like 5'6", like, but you know, just the aura of Pesci over the years, like makes everybody fear him. But I guess the real life Tommy was very similar to Joe Pesci, with the exception that he was almost a foot taller than Joe Pesci actually was, and was like a very large man. So interesting that they went the route of Pesci, but you know, he plays the tough guy part really well for somebody that, you know, probably wasn't capable of doing some of the physical things that he was doing in the movie. And Casino is even, he's even crazier in Casino if you haven't seen that. And there's just some, his kicking and punching technique is not ideal, but he's Joe Pesci, so you just kind of let it, you let it be.
That's funny. I got a note about the opening credits. They're kind of iconic, you know, how the Goodfellas kind of scrolls on screen, but real simple. The guy who designed that was a graphic designer named Saul Bass. And if in the graphic design world, he's kind of like one of the rock stars. And he went on to do like Cape Fear's intro graphic and Casino's. But prior to that, he had done the intros for the title design, rather, for like Vertigo, North by Northwest, Psycho. So like all of Alfred Hitchcock's biggest movies, on top of like Spartacus and like Ocean's 11 with the Rat Pack. So the like literally one of the best graphic designers in the world did these, you know, the very iconic opening Goodfellas title card.
That's cool.
So it's like an advertising fun fact.
No, so, that's good. That's good. I mean, I think that's all the facts I had. I think we pointed out a lot.
I got one more because they talk about right before Maury gets whacked, he's talking about the Boston College. He alludes to what was the Boston College basketball point shaving scandal, since this is a sports show. And they made a 30 for 30 on this, that Henry Hill is actually in. The real Henry Hill is like, you know, it is part of this documentary, because he ultimately ended up leaving witness protection program after he basically told the world that he was the Henry Hill from Goodfellas, but he never actually got whacked. But anyway, Boston College point shaving scandal was a real thing. They did an ESPN 30 for 30 on it. Henry Hill was involved. But I don't think they really ever made any money on it. I think they, you know, it was kind of up and down, and but ultimately a lot of kids got in trouble for that. It was a pretty big deal back in the 80s. I don't think Boston College basketball has ever been the same since.
The Bats murder too, is they said it's pretty close to like the actual real life murder, you know, in a way. The only thing, a few subtle differences, I guess. I mean, they didn't use like, I think they killed him, and then end up finding out like when they were taking him, like, I guess, to bury him, that he was still alive. Now, they didn't do like the knife and the gunshot thing like they did. And I don't know if they really went to like lunch or, you know, ate breakfast or whatever at his mom's house, but they, or whatever you would call that was. But so that did happen. The only other thing they did note is that it didn't happen that night of, like, there was some kind of altercation, and like a couple weeks later is actually when it actually went down. So, but no, that's a little fact.
All right. Hey, Greg, we got like 2 minutes left. So why don't we do like final, I don't know, everybody take like 15 seconds, give your final like ranking and, you know, final thoughts on the movie. So I'll have it. So I'll just say I think this movie, I already said it's a top 25 movie for me. You know, the more and more I watch it, I think it'll probably creep up a little higher into the top 20 for me. But overall, I probably give this movie definitely an A. I'm gonna give it, if I have to give it a percentage, I'm gonna give it a 93%. Just, I think it's a great, great movie. So Dave, how about you?
Yeah, I'm gonna go like a 95 on it. It is a classic. It's 1990 and you can still rewatch it to this day. Great. I think all three of those main characters all have interesting transitions throughout the whole movie, and they complement each other real well, you know, all three of them with their personalities. So excellent.
Mario?
95. Yeah, I'm with Dave. Mm-hmm. Two thumbs up. It's fantastic.
I'm going to go 98. It's almost perfect in my view, honestly. And for doing an MVP, I know we've talked a lot about the actors, but Martin Scorsese, this is, you know, he's had incredible movies. I will say this is probably his greatest movie, and just incredible achievement in filmmaking.
I think I concur on that, because this movie doesn't get made in as high quality without him. So 100% agreed. All right, gentlemen, well, this was fun, appreciate it, and Greg, thanks for running point on this. You got further than Chris Paul did this year. little